Welcome to the Cloak & Dagger Control Room. These are the Cloak & Dagger Internet Radio Briefings, Truth in the Form of Internet. I'm Lenny Bloom, and along with my co-host Sherman Skolnick, the great Judge Buster, tonight once again we exposed the traducing of the sheeple and revealed and uncovered more of the secrets that the Illuminati and other popish persons hope you don't learn. So join us tonight as we continue to expose this fascist criminal element that has seized power in America and elsewhere. That is why our expert guests are macro crime detectives and the best crime fighters on the planet. This knowledge is crucial to the survival of your friends and family to enable you to stay ahead of the criminals behind this attempted world takeover by the American neocons and the New World Order gangsters. Our free briefings air live at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, and then they're put in the archives for members. So sit back and relax and get updated. Remember, the American mass media forges the signatures of existence. Meanwhile, Cloak & Dagger reads them. And in an age where truth is just one man's opinion made popular, we must question all reality. Enjoy the update. I'm Lenny Bloom. Okay, welcome back to Cloak & Dagger. I'm your host, Lenny Bloom. And once again, we're here at cloakanddagger.ca to explore the secrets that the shadow government hopes you don't learn. And helping me to keep in touch with the criminal elite and follow them in their... What they're up to today is is the great Judge Buster from Chicago, Illinois, Sherman H. Skolnick. Welcome to the show, Sherman.
Yes, I'm pleased to be back on with you, Lenny.
And we have a really special guest.
Good guest tonight, and he's going to tell us a little bit about his background.
Welcome Carl Schwartz to the show. Carl, welcome to Cloak & Dagger.
But it's a pleasure to be with you. This is my fourth interview today, so I hope my voice will hold out.
Yes, absolutely. Well, Carl, where do you want to start? It's such a big subject. Why don't you start at the beginning? Give us your briefing.
Well, okay. I was affiliated with Smith Barney during the early to mid-90s. During that period of time, I had an office in Washington, D.C., very well connected in the circles. I was very well tied to the RNC. I saw quite a bit going on that I didn't like the contract with America. I was seeing how they were actually selling that as a contract with America, but it was actually a contract on America. It was basically corporatization of our government, moving it more towards fascism, corporate rule. Both of the parties were doing it, so I mean, it wasn't just George Bush and the neocons. It was also Clinton's people. And back up, I left Smith Barney, and I teamed up with UUNet. And they were the big ISP network that was bought by WorldCom, and we were heavily involved in photonics and growing the network offshore. We were the only global VAR of UUNet, and we tended to look for oil and gas companies. First, because if they had either abandoned lines or surplus size lines, it's real easy to run the conduit and the fiber through those pipes without having to dig the trench, say, for, 100 miles or 2,000 miles, however long the pipe is.
Right.
And during that process, we're talking in the last quarter of 1999, I went to a telecom conference and I met a company that I had never heard of before. Called Bridas Corporation from Argentina, and I always say it phonetically because people can find it easier. It's Bridas, B-R-I-D-A-S, but in Spanish they pronounce it Bridas. And I found out just before 9/11 happened that there was a book that came out of Europe by Broussard that had actually talked about Bridas having sewn up Turkmenistan and Pakistan under contract. Now, what Bridas showed me back in 99, which was, over 2 years before 9/11, was they had filed a $15 billion interference of contract lawsuit down in Houston, Texas, in the Southern District of Texas, U.S. District Court. And they also showed me an older version of the map that you can see today on their website. If you go look at what they have in the Caspian Basin area, they show the pipeline coming across Afghanistan. And it took a while to figure out, but the reason Broussard was not able to establish that they had tied up that piece of the pipeline as well is there was no news coming out of Brightus about that.
Mm-hmm.
There was also no news coming out of Afghanistan from the Taliban. And had I not been standing there talking to these guys about oil and gas right away in South America and Latin America, you know, I wouldn't have known it either. But when 9/11 happened, I was just like every American, I think most Canadians. I mean, I have friends, a lot of friends in the Oakville area and Hamilton, and they were telling me about how the newspapers, you know, had the face-to-face flags, you know, the Canadian flag, the American flag, United We Stand. They were plastered all over Hamilton and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of went into this mindset of, okay, fine, let's go attack these guys that did it to us. But after a while, the more I looked at this, the more I started figuring out that everything they had told us was fundamentally flawed. It was skewed. The way I say it is they had actually twisted the facts to fit policy.
Mm-hmm.
And it really came to a head starting in 2003 with me. I was working in March of 2001 on acquiring telecoms. That was one of the things I'd worked out with you, Unet. I was going to be leasing capacity from them, but I was also out trying to buy these telecoms, you know, for 2 cents on the dollar in bankruptcy.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew they were going to be dropping like flies. I was the high bidder on Viettel, Ebone, Williams Communications, and Global Crossing. And I didn't get any of them. And I started getting very suspicious why high bidder and due diligence was so horrifying to these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And along about May and June of 2001, we picked up on a trail. It was finance-related. In fact, your listeners have probably heard part of this because it happened right there in your area. Mark Valentine, I think it was called Thompson Carnahan.
Uh-huh.
The trading company that was cracked down on for doing illegal naked shorting.
Mm-hmm.
We started picking up on a lot of these guys using Canada, and some of your listeners, whichever side of the, you know, the border they're on, they can look at CanadianBusiness.com. October 2002, they can find two articles that were up there. One was called Predator or Prey. Had an FBI sting called Operation Bermuda Shorts. They arrested 57 people. We fingered about 18 of them. And another article called Blame Canada. And it was how these people were circumventing U.S. law and bouncing trades back and forth between Canada and the Caribbean and just using basically what I call collaborative shorting schemes
mm-hmm.
and naked shortage schemes to put these companies down and take them over cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when we started following those trails, it was amazing. They just kept popping up as Bush friends out of Texas, Bush pioneers in Texas and North Carolina and D.C. and New York City. And while I'm focused on buying these telecoms and trying to figure out how to structure going after those in the bankruptcy court, I've got people coming to me as investigators saying, what in the hell does this have to do with Pakistan? I said, I don't know. Put that in the corner. We'll look at it later. Or they'd say, what does this have to do with Afghanistan or some company out of Argentina or, you know, Turkmenistan? I mean, I wasn't interested in the oil and gas business in what you call Central Asia. But when we went back and started looking at what had popped up,
yeah,
and certain names had popped up, it all of a sudden dawned on me that what I was looking at was what is called Milken calls it nesting doll arrangements.
Could you say that again? A nesting?
Nesting doll, D-O-L-L,
uh-huh. Arrangements.
It's where you intentionally set things up to frustrate jurisdiction and venue, and even if you get nailed, they're probably going to sue the wrong defendant because you've got the assets so carefully tucked away. And this was a pattern that was going on over and over and over again. And Sherman, I understand you're in Chicago. You'll appreciate this part of this. One of the trails went all the way back to 1984, William Beep Jennings, Penn Central, Oklahoma City. That institution cratered Continental Illinois Bank.
Yeah.
That's because they had done a bunch of SPEs and bought down a lot of that bogus paper. And guess who was inside Continental Illinois Bank doing those SPEs? that cratered that bank, $9 billion in taxpayer losses. It was Andy Fastow. He was hired by Enron because he had already proven to the world he knew how to do it. And then he goes down to Enron and starts setting all these things up. We picked up on Andy's trail, going through the Cayman Islands, BVI, Bermuda, and most of those SPEs went straight to Uzbekistan and went straight over to India and Pakistan. And, I mean, we just all of a sudden had the lights coming on. You know, the pieces of the puzzle were all fitting together. When I heard about Sibel Edmonds, I tracked her down, and we found out that we had some of the names. She has all of the names. She hasn't shared with me who they all are, but I've dropped a few names in front of her that gave her pause. In fact, there was one name I dropped out there. She said, "How do you even know that name?" And it's a family out of Turkey called Uzan, U-Z-A-N, and they were actually using commingled accounts through Zurich and through the Cayman Islands to flush and wash some of this money through. The other thing that got real clear to me was how similar this was to Iran-Contra. Now, if you hear this on our media, you keep hearing that Sibel Edmonds has a gag order on her because she was involved in the translation of the memo or the Arabic document that says, Bin Laden is going to attack the United States and use jets. That is not what she translated that precipitated the gag order on her. What she translated was drug trafficking, money laundering, foreign names, and American names involved in the financing of 9/11.
Tell me this. Along the way, did you get the impression that the highest levels of the government were permitting and condoning these things that you were finding?
Yes, and let me back up a minute. I'm going to jump back to 1983, Sherman. I turned down in 1983 the opportunity. My name was one of two names being considered to be the president CEO of ADFA, Arkansas Development Finance Authority. At that time, I had two jobs. I had my design build company, and I was spending a lot of time working with prudential-based capital markets in New York City, doing defeasance financing. You know, when the treasuries were 11.5% to 14.5%, European currencies could be borrowed all day long at 6.5% to 7.5%. The differential in that, you could borrow in the lower interest rate, buy the high-yielding bonds, and the difference, you know, the difference in the interest yield alone was financing projects. We were financing refineries, big commercial office buildings leased to the government, things like that. But inside of ADFA, they were covering up the money laundering part of Iran-Contra, hiding it behind Fannie Mae and Ginnie Mae bond portfolios that were just absolutely huge. I'm $400, $500 million worth of Ginnie Mae bonds. But they didn't buy them at par. They bought them way down low, or they didn't even buy them at all. That could have even been falsified. But here's what else I found out. Sibel did not find this information out of counterterrorism. She found it out of ongoing investigations of these people out of FBI documents going back to 1998. So to answer your question, yes, there were people already under investigation, very high level in our government, involved in drug trafficking, involved in money laundering, and then all of a sudden the trails overlapped. My trail and her trail started overlapping. And it was frightening. We backed off of it for about 6 months trying to figure out that we had every fact double-checked. But it was when I started going back and watching Bush attack Afghanistan that we went back to verify, did Bradas still have that contract? And the answer was yes, they did, and the Taliban would not renege on that contract. And so I said, well, you know, post 9/11, the only remaining obstacle was Bradas, the Taliban, and us controlling that contract. Now, when I was in New York City at the 9/11 Confronting the Evidence symposium here about 2 months ago, I laid all this out for everybody, but I also, somebody in the audience hollered out at me, said, "How big of an oil deal is this?" Well, I told them at the time, I said, well, when I wrote the book, it was $7.34 trillion worth of oil. And between $3 and $3.5 $2 trillion worth of natural gas. Now, with the summer rise in the price per barrel, it is now over $10 trillion worth of gas. So you're looking at a $13 trillion plus motive for somebody to want to go take over a pipeline. Now, one of the things I was talking to Lenny about today, I sent a demand letter to George Bush on the 30th of September. The very first thing in that demand letter was demanding that he lift the gag order on Sabelle Edmonds right now so that we can know all the foreign names and American names that are on that list that she translated. The second thing brought up the Taliban and Bardas, and the third thing, I want to know how many Bardas employees or Afghanis that were working for Bardas are being held at Diego Garcia or being held in, say, Gitmo. And I have some inside sources in D.C. I sent that letter also to Kerry and to the DNC. My source in D.C. said, you freaked everybody out. Said the darn rats and the cockroaches went running everywhere.
Well, tell me this. Did you understand any justification other than greed and straight-out corruption for these happenings? In other words, did the government and these people have an excuse from what you saw to do these things, or was it just plain greed and corruption?
Well, greed and corruption, but let me add something else to it. If you look at how incredibly inept our government has been at managing their fiscal responsibilities in Washington, and how deep that this country's in debt right now because they just can't seem to run a clean ship up there. If you start looking at Iraq and Venezuela trying to index to the euro, you've got Russia pulling out on the dollar right now. You've got Japan not going to choke down any more of our debt. You've got a government running fiscally out of control. I think part of it was not only the flow and control of gas, but also trying to figure out some way that they were going to rein in, not their spending, but some way to pull in assets to justify the continued spending. What I've seen over and over again has been what I call transfer of wealth schemes. It's happened in telecom, it's happened in our securities and capitals market, and it's happening every day in Washington, D.C. And I think we're looking at it here in the oil industry as well.
Tell me this. In any time that you dealt with government officials, did you ever run into any that were as well informed as you were?
No. Most of them were like deer in the headlights. Now, they may have been pretty well informed, but they were a little taken back that I had so many facts to put in their face.
Or did they find it convenient to play stupid?
I've talked to a couple of them that it was obvious they were playing stupid. Some of them, they didn't know what to think about it. Now, let me back up to 2003, because something else happened here. I wasn't ready to write the book, and I've written a book called One-Way Ticket to Crawford, Texas. It's 810 pages plus a 10-page index, and I've had some people say the index is better than Richard Clark's book, because you can see where it's headed, because I'm naming a lot of names in this book, and they come up multiple times. I've got a website that your listeners can go to. It's www.carlswartz. It's carlswartz.com. I've got some articles that are posted there. The book is available there. I mean, there's a lot of things been going on here, and there's also a copy of that demand letter, by the way. There is a link going right to the demand letter.
And they can get the book through your website, or how?
They can get the book through the website, yes. In fact, it went to print today. I was teasing some guys on the radio today. My second book's going to be a book about how hard it has been to get the truth out in front of the world about this. I've been working on this for about a year. And I've had one publisher after another take the manuscript and just sit on it. You know, wouldn't even return a phone call, wouldn't even, you know, wouldn't say yes or no. They just sit on it.
So what you saw and observed practically firsthand was that the government, the assets of the government, which are the people, in a way got hollowed out by this incompetence connected with also with corruption. Am I correct?
Yes, that's pretty accurate. Some of it was planned, though, Sherman. I mean, some of it was market-driven, and some of it was literally what I call, it's like Mark Valentine was doing out of Canada, it's what I call corporate executions. You would go out here and just pick a company and literally put it down, and our government knew it was going on. It was when the same names kept popping up that were involved over in, say, Pakistan, India, involved over here in the Caspian Basin, that I'm sitting there going, like, what am I looking at? And see, this was before Iraq. This was before we saw the invasion of Iraq, and we saw all of these Bush buddies go over there and get lined up to privatize the entire country of Iraq.
Do I understand that you have a series of questions that George W. Bush should answer but doesn't?
Yeah, I found out Sunday night from a high-level Secret Service person who called a friend of mine in Los Angeles, said that memo right there that Carl Schwartz sent to the president, it pins 9/11 to Cheney and to Bush, and if they answer that, they're going to be under treason charges.
Would you like to repeat some of those questions?
Let me get to that particular website. It's the 9/11 Citizens Watch. I've got it coming up, 9/11citizenswatch.org. They are the only website that I'm aware of that posted it and had the right date. Rents.com has it posted on there, but they show the date of October 13th. It actually went September the 30th. Here's the first question. I demand as an American citizen that you lift the gag order on Sybil D. Edmonds and let Americans know what foreign names and what American names she uncovered in her FBI translations that were involved in drug trafficking, money laundering, and the financing of 9/11. Her facts and your official story lies do not add up. Americans demand the truth on that matter before the election. The second one, I demand to know what energy companies were in that Cheney Energy Task Force meeting and what discussions there were as to the steps that would be taken to remove the Taliban and Bridas Corporation as the last remaining obstacle to the United States controlling the Trans-Afghanistan pipeline. Bridas still had the contract, so if there was any discussions of getting rid of the Taliban, they had to be discussing getting rid of Bridas, since Bridas was a competitor of everybody else that wanted the pipeline. You follow me?
Yeah.
Said, I met that company in 1999 and have known since then about the brightest B-Unical $15 billion interference of contract lawsuit in the U.S. District Court, Southern District of Texas. I also know about the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals decision on September 9, 2003 that upheld the brightest $500 million arbitration settlement and the March 22, 2004 denial of writ of certiorari at the United States Supreme Court, case 03-1018, Turkmeneft v. Brightest. And Turkmeneft is the oil and gas ministry of Turkmenistan. Item 3, I demand to know how many prisoners are being held at Gitmo and other places that are either Brightest employees or are persons that know all about Bridas Corporation and what your administration did to get control of that Trans-Afghanistan pipeline. Let me scroll down, because there's a real good one here that's popped out to everybody. Oh, I demand to know why you appointed 10 persons to the 9/11 Commission, 8 of which are directly benefiting by the Taliban-Bridas contract obstacle being removed, breached with military force, and the big Caspian oil deals that are now coming to market under the control of your friends. No, America does not thank you for that, nor do we hold such despicable conduct up high. I demand to know what U.S. oil company stepped up as the sponsor of that OPEC Asia Development Bank-funded Trans-Afghanistan pipeline and what U.S. company is constructing that pipeline right now and what U.S. firms are supplying the key components and their relationship to your administration. They've announced the funding, but they have not announced who they're building it for or who is building it. Now, this is where the trails start moving back. This came out of California, gentlemen. When we were after WCG, which is out of Tulsa, that was a spinoff from Williams Companies. They were one of the 21 energy companies that was fleecing California. You remember that?
During
2000-2001.
Yeah.
I demand to know that you identify the company and persons who were going around Brightest to be the natural gas suppliers to the U.S.-owned natural gas electrical generation plants in Pakistan. Dynegy Illinova, they sold that to Tenaska out of Omaha. El Paso, two OPIC finance transactions, and others. And let me come down, because this is the one that's kind of blown everybody out. I demand to know why you appointed Richard Benveniste to the 9/11 Commission when it was his law firm that was stalling Brightest Corporation at the Fifth Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals and the U.S. Supreme Court. In the matter of Brightest Corporation v. Turkmenev, and his law firm is directly involved in Pakistan, Turkmenistan, Kazakhstan, and Uzbekistan, and your administration. And see, everybody thought he was the Democrat. He was going to stand up and fight him.
Yeah.
Now, here's another one. I demand to know who Remington Holdings Limited is and Western Acquisitions, Inc., both Baker and Bott's clients. And the lucky recipients of OPIC financing to acquire oil and gas deposits in Pakistan. They got $130.75 million just handed to them.
Wow. Did the what I call the monopoly press ever ask questions like this?
Well, Newsweek's been sitting on this story since late May. I've talked to New York Post, New York Times, Charlotte Observer, Washington Times, and L.A. Times. Nobody wants to run with the story. They ask tough questions. They don't get access up in Washington, D.C. But OPIC financed $130.75 million for whoever Remington Holdings and Western Acquisitions, Inc. is, and you'll never believe how we found that one. That one came all the way back around to us from Pakistan.
Do I understand something that at one time you thought it appropriate or proper to support the Bush administration, but then you changed your mind?
Listen, I worked my fanny off in 92 trying to get his father reelected. I was on the phone every day with Rob Porter's senior aide, Nancy Johnson. I supported Bush in 2000, but about a year to a year and a half ago, I started realizing what these people are. They're fascist. To me, neocon under their rule means New World Order fascist. I mean, that's why we're seeing so much lockstep coming at us and, you know, just cramming it down everybody's throat. We're also finding something else out that's going on in the Caspian that is what I call aggravating foreign policy. This is a quote off of a website out of Israel. IFTRIC, and that's I-F-T-R-I-C, that stands for the Israeli Foreign Trade Risk Insurance Corporation, and Citibank have an agreement allowing Citibank to finance approved IFTRIC-backed transactions. What has happened, you gentlemen remember back in Uzbekistan, back around February or March of this year, they all of a sudden had this rise in Al-Qaeda terrorism. About 70 were killed.
Yeah.
They had just closed a deal called Shurtan 2, S-H-U-R-T-A-N, and the Roman numeral 2. Who did that was the Mayor Brown Rowe Law Firm, while you've got this guy sitting on the 9/11 Commission, Benveniste. And within 72 hours of them closing that transaction and the people over there finding out that it was an American bank, it was ABN AMRO out of the Netherlands, and it was a bank out of Tel Aviv, and this IFTRIC insurance group got crammed down their throats, and all of a sudden they had a... I've been telling everybody, is this terrorism or is this outrage?
Well, tell me this. From studying these things, did you reach the opinion that the current Bush White House, with their foreign policies, in some ways so irritated the Arabs that we have this situation where they're out to harm us, to get us?
This entire GWAT, to be honest with you, I think this global war on terrorism is about 90%, maybe 80% opportunism and fable, and the other part of it is people who literally want to hurt us back because we've gone over there and stomped on them. And, what they're claiming is a global war on terror is more outrage to me based on what I know. Now, here's one of them that I understand from the Secret Service guy that called my friend in L.A. This one got him. This one sent them running. This is item number 16 of the 30 demands. I demand to know why your administration has never disclosed that DynePort Vaccine LLC, owned by DynCorp and now owned by Computer Sciences Corporation, a Bush pioneer, is a possible source for where the weaponized AIM strain of anthrax came from that was used against this nation. How did your administration manage to miss one of your campaign contributors and a company doing large volumes of business with your administration? It even being known euphemistically, DynCorp, as the mercenary company. Who put that contract on America?
Well, we had a guest on recently who heard a series on BBC documenting that the whole idea of Al-Qaeda and terrorist cells is substantially and mostly a fairy tale, and that no such thing really exists. Well, what do you make of that?
I think that's pretty accurate, and let me tell you why. I'm getting down to 19 and 20. And Lenny, you'll love this. This is right up in your backyard, okay?
Okay.
I demand to know why your administration keeps running the name and photos of Adnan G. El-Shukrajuma as the dirty bomb boogeyman. And on March 25th, 2003, the FBI knew exactly where to find him and did not go after him. That telephone call was made from my telephone, same one we're talking on right now, gentlemen, by a Canadian friend that was in Little Rock on that date, Mr. Bush, so do not pretend national security with me. I am first person on this matter, and all of America deserves to know the extent that your administration has been and is lying to us all. And someone that is not Al-Qaeda is probably dropping a suspect name as they set up a dirty bomb attack on the United States. Sure have pushed up the oil and gas prices with your strategy, though. Guess we can consider that another mission accomplished. Item number 20. I demand to know why your administration keeps referring to Adnan G. El-Shukrajuma as a Saudi, when the FBI knows full well he is not a Saudi. His family is from Guyana in South America, and they have lived in Florida since 1986 without incident. His grandparents were from Yemen, moved long ago to South America, and his mother is from Trinidad and Tobago. Why do you keep trying to paint him as something he is not?
Tell me this. Somewhere along the way, did you as a businessman become very discouraged about business, the way it is conducted and so on in America?
Yeah, I mean, it got to where I've been in casinos that were run cleaner than Washington, D.C. and Wall Street are. In fact, I've been in some bars I didn't want to go in because somebody wanted to go shoot pool, and you thought you were going to get a knife fight any second that were run cleaner than some things I've been seeing in our government and on Wall Street.
Do you believe that these problems that you outlined, is there a simple remedy or probably not?
Well, I have spent a lot of time since I had that meeting up in New York on 9/11. Because of my presentation, out of that group of 1,200 people, I've had about 600 of them, you know, just basically align with me. I have had several groups of people in meetings trying to head off what you would call military uprisings. I mean, there's some people that have had all they intend to put up with. I think politically there is a solution, but it is going to require that we not vote predictably. It's going to require a third party. It is going to require a joining of the hands across the aisle and going after these people to basically do what I've been saying. This is my 14th radio interview in the last 3 weeks, and they've really picked up here in the last 3 days.
Well,
I've been telling everybody...
Wait, Sherman, let him finish his point.
I've been telling everybody it's time that we flush the toilet in Washington, D.C., both sides of the aisle. Now, stop and think what I'm reading to you, gentlemen. Kerry knew this and did not even use this information in the debates. If I had been in a debate with George Bush, I would have shredded him right there on national and international TV. And they sat there and played namby-pamby with each other. And, I mean, they basically did like the 9/11 Commission. Let's play Where's Waldo.
I'm afraid that our prediction, Sherman, that Kerry was Bush's shill, there's so many tumblers falling into place to support that. Unfortunately, I think we're right.
But tell me this. The good people of this country, obviously, greatly outnumber these scoundrels.
I think they honestly think, Sherman, that if push come to shove, they're going to have the military to put us in our place. I mean, if you start looking at some of the manuals they're circulating around to the police force, I mean, they're basically giving police forces the right to just open fire on you. The other day, there were three teachers in Oregon thrown out of a Bush rally. They had on T-shirts with an American flag, and under the American flag it says, "Protect our civil liberties," and they were forcibly removed. Down in Texas, a 75-year-old woman was hit with a taser, you know, a stun gun.
But I think you recognize that we can't simply quit, because if the good people quit, the scoundrels win.
Well,
so my motto is, stop cursing the darkness and light a candle. From what I understand, you're doing your very best as a patriotic citizen to light a candle and expose these people.
I've lit about a 5-state forest fire, Sherman.
Tell me this, though. You're a little discouraged about the possibility that election politics can correct these things that you have been a witness to?
I think it's going to take several things. I know I was on a radio show this afternoon that I didn't even know I was on. I just got a telephone call, and they said, "Can you be on the air in 15 seconds? I said, "Sure." I didn't even know who I was going to be on with. It was Jimmy Walter. He's the guy that financed the 9/11 program. He's also financing another website. It's called reopen911.org. And I would suggest everybody go to that site and sign that petition. And what that is, we are going to deliver a petition to Elliot Spitzer, the Attorney General of the state of New York, to bring action against the United States government for treason and also for genocide. And I've been trying to tell people, you also need to include in there the financial and monetary damages of this, because they've been sitting here, you know, ruining our economy with their policies and with their actions.
Did you somewhere along the way reach a conclusion that what happened in 9/11 was not orchestrated by somebody 10,000 miles away with a cell phone in a cave, but could well have been a high-level plot by government and international forces of various types? Have you reached such a conclusion?
Everything I've looked at says that's exactly what happened.
So, I
don't see any 757 hitting the Pentagon. I interviewed Karen Kwiatkowski. Have you talked to her, Winnie?
No, I haven't.
She's a retired lieutenant colonel, U.S. Air Force Intelligence. She was in the group inside the Pentagon that some people call the Operation of Special Plans, and other people call it the Lie Factory. MotherJones.com did an article about it as the Lie Factory. It's how they intentionally stovepiped the information to Cheney and Libby without going through the appropriate channels. They were trying to get policy to fit the desired end regarding Iraq. And, you know, the stuff about WMD, imminent threat, Al-Qaeda, all that good stuff, which we now know is all a total lie. But she told me that she was in the Pentagon that day, and when it was hit, she came downstairs and was around the corner in between 8 and 9 minutes to help out. And as soon as she came around the corner, the FBI was already across the street at the Citco confiscating the cameras. You can't drive from any FBI office in that area to that point in that period of time to have gotten there to get those cameras. And over at the Sheraton, they had cameras on top of it for security reasons, and there's also the Virginia Department of Transportation had cameras. All of those were confiscated. But the biggest thing that I saw is that there was no piece of a 757 anywhere around that building, nothing laying out on the ground. And I finally saw a FEMA site. Some of you people may want to get a copy of this. I got it in the mail Monday. It is a tape called Treason, Inc., Evidence of Deception and Cover-Up on 9/11. This is a gentleman that put this together. I don't know where he got this tape, but this is the only place I've seen these scenes. It's called HillSenateNow.org. The guy's name is Craig Hill. He's running against Patrick Leahy up in Vermont. This is the best tape I've seen on 9/11 so far. And in one of the pictures, it shows a pile of rubble, and it shows a piece of a jet engine. But it is not a 757 engine. It is out of a Air Force Global Hawk.
Yeah, I've seen those pictures. Tell me this.
I have a friend that's at Huntsville that did some checking on the components, and that's a Global Hawk component laying there.
Right, it's 3 feet in diameter, whereas the jet airplane, their turbine, it would be about 9 feet in diameter.
Well, no, it's not even 3 feet in diameter. It's more like 21 inches and something. But you've seen the picture I'm referring to, I'm mentioning. And it definitely shows a jet engine part laying there in that pile of rubble.
So I very often make perhaps statements that are too simplistic and too blunt. But if I were to say, the straight out, the Arabs didn't do it, is that something that you would agree with?
Yes, I have talked to the Saudis at great length, Saudi embassy, because I was curious about Sheikh Rajuma. I wanted to know why they ran a press release September the 4th, 2003, he is not Saudi. They provided me a wealth of information, and it all checked out. It's like I said in my book, I mean, everything they gave me checked out, and that's a damn sight more than I can say for George Bush and Dick Cheney. But see, I'm seeing a lot of doors, Sherman. Let me read number 29 to you.
Yeah, please, go ahead.
I demand to know why Lee Ka-shing was denied global crossing on national security grounds, very public. And, I mean, I was the guy fighting him over that company at the FCC. I mean, you can look up my name, and it goes to the FCC website. Yet allow him in the back door of Savvy Technology, not disclosed, the RFID technology company that's purportedly protecting our ports from insertion of a nuclear bomb into this nation via ocean-going containers. How many doors are left wide open by your administration in this GWAT fable? Wei Ka-shing owns Hutchison Whampoa. That's the world's largest container ship company. And he is a silent partner in the technology company that's supposedly protecting our ports from insertion of a bomb into our ports. Now, where's the sanity in that, guys?
I might add that he is also a very, very good friend and business partner.
Ka-shing?
Lee Ka-shing.
Yeah.
A very, very good business partner of Her Majesty the Queen Elizabeth II and her royal consort, Prince Philip, and a major shareholder, Sherman, in the Canadian Bank for Imperial Commerce.
He also owns Husky.
Husky Oil.
Yes, he owns 95% of Husky through his own name and a holding company. And they spun off when, you remember when they took the petrochemical division and spun it off to the Chinese company? I think it was called Novachem, something like that,
mm-hmm.
Novachem. Anyway, they spun that off, and it went right back to his buddies over in the PRC. That's up in Calgary.
Right.
I want you to understand something. I have the opinion that one of the reasons America, with these circumstances, has not gone straight to hell is because there are good-hearted people out there like yourself that have risked your neck and your reputation to point out the truth to the American people. And I want to commend you that you have brought this information to us, sort of, I'll call it your treasury of wisdom. You really understand things, and for people like you, I think our country would have gone to hell already.
Well, luckily there's a lot of me, and I'm finding that there are a lot of people working behind the scenes right now, former intelligence people, former law enforcement, former FBI, former military, even current military, that are all seeing this new world order and this grand agenda, and they're all coming to the conclusion on their own, we're not buying it. We're not going to tolerate. You know, we want our America. We don't want your fascist America. And what if you look at Online Journal right now, there's two articles by me on the front page of OnlineJournal.com. The third one down, this is the title of it, A Christian Republican Speaks to Other Christians. See, this is something else that's freaking out the RNC, because I am a devout Christian and a very conservative Republican. It says, beware, the GOP has become a fascist cult. And I explain in detail how to spot it and how to understand what you're looking at.
Yes, in that article, you have a number of points you picked up of how to recognize a cult and how to recognize a fascist state.
Yes.
Now, can I add a little anecdote here that might lighten up the thing?
Well, hold on. Let's just go. Okay, and then I want Carl. Yeah, do that, Sherman. And then I want Carl to go through some of those points.
Carl, I just listened to this because our position here all the time is we joke a little bit, because what we talk about is so sinister and terrible that it upsets people, and so we joke about the fact that maybe Letty and I are really secretly in the headache pill business, because in putting on guests like you that are really good at setting forth these things, some people are getting a headache. Now, you said you were in the financial industry, and I got friends in the financial industry, and we share information, you know. So one time, one of my contacts calls me and says, Skolnick, you're clever. Can you suggest some ground-level business that I can get into? I says, yeah, I heard you got a vacant factory ready to do some business in Singapore. He says, that's right. Skolnick, what do you suggest we do there? And guess what I told him? I says, first of all, I says, you see the way America's going? He says, yes. You see the way that we don't have any candidates that are ready to deal with this because they're mealy-mouthed. He says, now come on, Skolnick, you owe me a favor. What is it that you suggest my factory in Singapore start producing? I says, I suggest that you get in on the ground floor of producing Nazi flags, and you should urge that they hang them in the airport, and people will get used to it. And the figure, as long as the Nazi flag is there, it may be a dictatorship, but the airport will be safe.
Yeah.
you may not like that little story, but that sort of tells it, doesn't it?
Well,
that the American people may be willing to give up their cherished constitutional Bill of Rights for security from this boogeyman situation.
Well, there is a quote. A friend of mine sent it to me. Let me see if I can find this right quick, because I had to call and ask him one day. He had sent this to me, and my email got hit and just locked up on me. And I said, you need to send that back, because I'm writing an article and I'm going to quote that in it. It was about the CFR, and he had sent me this, and it just sent chills up my spine. I mean, how some of these people think and what they think is justified, here it is right here. Listen to these two quotes. We're on the verge of a global transformation. All we need is the right major crisis, and the nations will accept the new world order. It's David Rockefeller.
Yeah, I've seen that. That's right.
Okay, here's the second quote. Today, Americans would be outraged if UN troops entered Los Angeles to restore order. Tomorrow, they will be grateful. This is especially true if they were told there's an outside threat from beyond, whether real or promulgated, that threatened our very existence. It's then that all peoples of the world will plead with world leaders to deliver them from this evil. The one thing every man fears is the unknown. When presented with this scenario, individual rights will be willingly relinquished for the guarantee of their well-being, granted to them by their world government. That's Henry Kissinger. These people think this way. And when I read stuff like that, I say, you know what? I'm 53 years old. I have a right to the American dream. That was my entitlement for being born here. I'm not buying off on their game plan that I'm just going to be either a cash crop or a hamster on a wheel.
Tell the listeners again, and repeat it a couple times slowly so they can perhaps write it down if they wish, your website and any reading material or books that have been published or about to be published, written by you, and so on. We'll go into that now.
Okay, well, there's two articles on the front page of onlinejournal.com. That's www.onlinejournal.com. And then the other one is my website, where the book is available, but there's also a link to all the articles I've written or had written about me here in the last month or so. And that is www.carlschwartz, it's KarlSchwarz.com. And the book's available there, and it's got, like, Richard Behan, the liberal author that wrote the GOP Inc., he wrote a great piece about me for smirkingchimp.com. That thing got, like, 8,000 reads in 2 days.
Let me ask this, and it may be a foolish question. Are any of your books available through Amazon or Barnes & Noble?
Not yet. I mean, we haven't been able to get anybody to pick up on this, and we just went to press today. I mean, it has literally taken 8 months to get this done. I mean, we've been harassed from every direction you can imagine, but it went to press today. I mean, these books will be shipping next week.
Well,
there's a lot of information in the book that will survive the election, because it names not only who but how they're doing this. I mean, this is going to result in lawsuits. It's going to result in, you know, what I call RICO actions to recover damages. I mean, it basically shows you the methodology. And the GOP Inc. that Richard Behan wrote, he's describing it as movement conservatism. I call them financial terrorists. And in the book, I'm showing people how they do it. And who is doing it?
Do I understand that despite the somber and sort of depressing situation with these facts, that you are among those that are hopeful that we can save our dear country at a time when some of us feel that we are perhaps in the darkest period of American history?
Yeah.
But you are hopeful that we can save this country somehow.
Yes. In fact, after you read the first chapter is just kind of telling people why I woke up. Chapters 2, 3 are about our military, the big Caspian oil deal. Chapter 4 is about financial-related issues and how they're using terrorism to drive up the price of oil. 5 is about the anthrax vaccine and the anthrax attack. 6 is about national security. 7 is about the dirty bomb guy we talked about earlier. 8 is titled Planting Weeds in America's Rose Garden. It's how the PRC, Israelis, and the U.S. are actually out creating this WMD fiasco. 9 is about Iraq. 10 is about the similarities between his father's administration and his. If you know his father's administration as well as I did, you can see this, you know, just incredible similarities. 11 is about the Caspian and who did 9/11. I show the way to reduce it down, but it also exposes who on the 9/11 Commission is incredibly conflicted and why. I mean, I even cite what their conflicts are. Let me see, 12, 13, and 14 is about the market fraud and telecom and how we got onto these trails. But all of a sudden at 15, it does change, Sherman. 15 is about impunity and building a peaceful tomorrow. We can't be a nation, as my son says, a bellicose nation, and make friends. And right now, our financial terrorists and the corporations are running this country into the ground, and other countries with them, like Canada. 16 was about a policy issue that I sent to our Congress, and they did nothing. It is a constitutional issue. They're required by law to do something, but they're the ones that opened the door. This is how the fraud is being covered up under color of law. 17 answers your question. 17 is, and it's just a hypothetical. Said, if I was president, here's what I'd do. You know, what are we going to do? In fact, the title of this chapter was, what are we going to do to clean up W's mess? And it has a lot of ideas in there that are fairly radical, but they're long overdue. I mean, everybody that's read chapter 17 says, hell, there is hope, isn't it? I said, yeah, there is hope.
I hope you understand that Lenny and I, and I'm sure the listeners, are appreciative that you took the time to bring a virtual treasury of wisdom and facts onto this program.
You're welcome.
To benefit and help your fellow Americans and so on.
Well,
perhaps
even Canadians
survive this dark period of American history.
Yeah, I mean, I've got just probably 500, 600 good friends in Canada, and all the way from Ottawa, actually all the way from New Brunswick over to Hamilton. I mean, I've always teased people in Canada. I said, I feel like I'm in Arkansas, except for this funny money and these crazy speed limit signs up here.
Lenny knows that on this program, occasionally I joke with him. What is it about the food and water in Canada that must be so superior to what we Americans eat and drink?
I don't know. I
that
like
the Canadians have escaped this problem.
I don't know. I like that pea mill bacon they have up there. I love that stuff. It's a special type of bacon they have up there. It's just absolutely wonderful.
Well, Sherman, I don't know whether or not we've escaped it enough. The head of state of Canada, I think, is going to be at the center of what's causing a lot of the problems that we've identified in this hour. I unfortunately believe that the Queen, the English crown, the English monarchy, which was very much behind the assassination of John Kennedy, and the English monarchy has not given up wanting to get back the colony of America and make America, and I believe it has been making America into, it has captured it and occupied it once again. And I think that's something that has to be brought to the attention of Americans, how there are many people out to get them. And hopefully they'll wake up in time and rise up, and there'll be another great revolution that will unleash a whole new millennium of prosperity and liberty for the continent.
I hope you're blessed with your efforts, and we would be pleased and honored for you to take the time again in the future
to come back
on this program and tell us more about this
subject.
I'd be
happy to do so. Lenny, you'll get a kick out of this.
Yes.
Two of the emails I get on a regular basis are Stephen Harper's Conservative Party up there and also Comer.
Yeah, Stephen Harper was invited to Bilderberg, so he's a character that we have to keep an eye on. When you say Stephen Harper, do you mean him personally, or his office, or what?
Well, his office. I mainly work through his Ottawa and his Calgary offices.
Really?
Mm-hmm. They know who I am.
Good. Well, yeah. Maybe the media up here will start to wake up, too.
Yeah, Frank Falk called me from CBC with a weird request the other day. He wants to talk to me as a conservative Christian about why I don't see George Bush as a Christian. I said, well, first off, you know, Christians don't lie. And if they do, they correct themselves. And this guy just keeps lying. He's not about to correct himself.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Carl, having your treasury of wisdom and your backbone and your spirit here has just uplifted us, and it's just been tremendous, and we sure wish and hope that you'll come back again very, very soon. The election's going to be, it's a week tomorrow, is that right?
Oh, it's a week from today.
A week today?
Days from now, yeah.
A week tonight, and if you're listening, we're going to be having a special election special on the night of the election. We'll be live every 2 hours, beginning at 7 p.m., and Carl, if you're around that evening, hopefully you'll be able to join us.
I would be happy to. I certainly don't want to watch the early returns and watch them call an election bogusly again.
Yeah. Well,
thanks for your wisdom and insight, Carl. Thank you.
Well, Chairman, I've heard a lot about you over the last year or so, and it's nice to finally talk to you.
Well, God bless you and keep you safe and prosper your cause.
Well, God bless you, gentlemen, too, and your listeners, too. Y'all have a good evening.
Thanks a lot.
Bye.
Thank you for being on our program. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night.
Bye. Good night.
You ready for my closing thing?
Well, before we close off, Sherman, I'd like to just put everything now in. I don't want to close off right away. I want to get into a habit of when the guest leaves of giving some closure and some perspective to what we've just heard. I'm normally a very pessimistic person, gloom and doom, but after hearing Carl, really has buoyed up my spirit, and I'm getting the feeling that there's some hope. There are Americans who really, we may be able to wake a majority of Americans up out of their sleep, out of their somnambulism, out of their slumber, and break through the old patterns of thought and start to see the world and America really as it is and what's been going on.
I agree with that. I certainly agree with that. There are people out there very...
And we outnumber the bad guys, and hopefully, and it's wonderful to have a conservative person who's also a Christian. You know, they say that the conservative right is supporting Bush, but it could all fall apart. All you have to do is move one mirror, as you know, Sherman, and the whole thing can come tumbling down.
Yes, right. Move one mirror in the House of Mirrors. And the whole thing is that it ends.
And that it ends, comes tumbling down. And folks, if you're listening tonight, get on the phone and just call somebody and start talking about it. Talking and the act of using your speech and oratory and telling people you don't understand the power of speech and oratory. It has it resonates on multi levels. So get out and call people and tell them to tune into cloakanddagger.ca and listen to us. We're non-commercial. We have no advertising. We have been approached by advertisers to advertise, and we've turned them down because we're media scientists, we're counter-propaganda experts, and by being non-commercial, we're totally neutral, and so we can give you a backstage pass on the global theater and a cat-bird seat. And we call them the way we see them, and we don't have any bias. And the bias that we normally would have, we've learned how to counter. And so we give you the truth. And this is one of the only places on the Internet where you're actually going to get the truth. And Sherman, with thanks to you and all your help and the guests and people that you've been bringing on, we've been able to chip away. And yeah, go ahead and tell your email, how to get on your email.
For the listeners to find out how to get on my email list, to get our reports, Middle Finger News that Lenny and I both work on, Skolnick's report, to get them by email as soon as they're issued, and to find out how to get on my email list, send an email to me, Skolnick, Skolnick, at ameritech.net, and that's Ameritech, Skolnick, at ameritech.net. Be positive to put in the subject line, so that it'll stand out and I'll notice it right away. I want to get on your email list, Skolnick@ameritech.net, and I will respond and tell you how to go about getting on our email list. And I think we're ready for my closing salute, or whatever you call it. To hell with the Queen of England!
And Prince Philip, too. Good night, Sherman.
Good night, everybody.
You're listening to the Cloak and Dagger live Internet briefing. cloakanddagger.ca, truth in the form of Internet, antidote to media propaganda. Read it yourself instead of asking the government why, because then that cause of death will cause the propaganda to die. We're an ongoing update on the globalization and globalization of the mass media. We're revamping the future because universal truth is not yet mass appeal. So don't forget, it's a cloak and dagger world. Read it yourself instead of asking the